And because she's on the phone, I can't unmute her. So we can't hear
the host would like you to unmute your microphone. You can press star 6 to unmute.
Okay, so Loretta, so you at, so can she hear us to unmute?
I do hear you. Evening.
Okay, so she just unmuted. Okay.
And it's 7 o'clock.
Yeah, we're going live now. So.
Hold on.
Ryan, are you going to do the?
Here they come.
Recording of the video, please.
Okay.
Hi, good evening, and welcome to another episode of Hashtag My Investing.
You are muted.
Hi, my name is Ann McMillan. I am the Master Wealth Builder, helping you to build a stronger and better life and business. And I am excited every single Wednesday when we come on as volunteers with Better Investing, Iona McMillan and I, to bring you another episode of this phenomenal show. We want to welcome you to the program. We also want to tell you a little bit about Better Investing. And Better Investing is also known as the National Association of Investment Clubs, or NAIC, as some of us call it. And the organization was founded in 1951. Since then, the organization has changed its name to the National Association of Investors, doing business as Better Investing. This organization has created more than 5 million individuals that we've helped over the years from its founding to have a better quality of life, learning how to become better investors. And as we do that, this program was designed to bring to you individuals who are teaching investing or volunteers or just regular individuals sharing their investment education story. And today, we are very excited, Ione and I, to bring you another program with another guest. And our guest today is Mark Hebner. And Mark is the founder and president of Index Funds Advisors. Mark and I had an opportunity to talk, and he is such an amazing individual. And he's the author of a highly regarded book entitled The 12-Step Recovery Program for Active Investors. And of course, I joked with him and said, oh, sounds like AA. But anyway, he's going to talk about this phenomenal book and his book. He has another book which he's going to talk about, which I'll let him share that information. But Mark also is a respected speaker and also a frequent news contributor. He is an authority on investing, and his life's mission is to change the way the world invests by replacing speculation with education. So Mark is many, many, many things. Mark, I'm going to let you tell more about your story, and as we continue to interview you, I will share more about your bio. So with those thoughts in mind, let me welcome my co-host, Iona McNeil, to the program as we start this interview. How are you tonight, Ione?
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking. How about you?
Awesome. Awesome. Awesome.
So, Mark, I am so excited to have you on. I'm sure people did not read your bio beforehand. Which is going to be good because we're going to, you know, take you back to your early beginnings, but then we're going to jump into how you went into business and became a CEO of a company and after all of that, realized that you still didn't have the skills to manage your own money the best way that was best for you. And that took you on your own personal investment journey. So did you grow up in a house that talked about money or talked about investing? Tell us a little bit about your first memories of money.
So first of all, I did not grow up in a house where we talked about investing. My mother was a milliner, so she made hats. And every Tuesday night, she would have like 30 or 40 ladies over at our house. We had this big recreation room, and they would sit and make hats for hours, you know, to match their outfits and stuff. And so I could see Anne in one of those hats to match that little outfit she's got going there. Anyway, and so my mom was all into these arts and crafts. My dad was an electrical engineer. And about in the sixth grade, I became a drummer. And so I used to love to play the drums. Of course, nobody else wanted to hear me play the drums. And money really wasn't a topic of discussion. And in fact, it really didn't come up in my life until many, many years later. We'll get to that. When I had the very good fortune to be able to sell the shares I had in a publicly traded company. And that sort of launched my journey to being an investor. My early memories, though, it's funny. I mentioned this the other day to somebody. I used to love to read those Richie Rich comic books. And I'm going, man, wouldn't that be fun, you know, to have that kind of life? Of course, total fantasy. And then they came out with the movies, you know, after that. And so I was, I guess, always a little fascinated by that. But and then as I started playing in bands, you know, we actually got paid. You know, we had to divide it up. But we started playing in different high school and little clubs and stuff. And so I started to get some money back then. But I do not have a recollection of me taking that money and, you know, trying to invest it.
Well, that's a good beginning, because the reason we really like to ask that question is to let people get a chance to know that more often than not, most of our guests did not have the experience of learning about money in the home, right? So, yeah. You know, even if you become a better investor or a successful investor over time, it's usually going to take some type of initiative on your part, a decision on your part to seek this thing out and become better, because the skills are not just laying around. Or and even if you come from money, a lot of times you still aren't taught how to handle it. So let's fast forward a little bit, because, you know, so far you sound like a regular American, you know, growing up with parents that love them, doing the best they know how. And
yep.
You ended up becoming, is it a chemical engineer?
No, a nuclear pharmacist.
A nuclear pharmacist. Okay.
So that's a pharmacist. That's a pharmacist that handles radioactive pharmaceuticals. Some of your listeners might have been in the nuclear medicine department of a hospital. It's usually part of radiology. And they have these nuclear medicine tests that they do. And because we were in Las Vegas. I grew up in Las Vegas, Nevada. And my dad worked at the Nevada test site where they developed the bomb, the one that Howard Hughes complained about because they were blowing up these bombs in the desert, right? And then he got transferred to Los Alamos, New Mexico, where they did more research on radioactive materials. And so because he was there, I moved over there to go to college at the University of New Mexico. And they had a program they developed to teach pharmacists about these radioactive pharmaceuticals. And it was because it was close to Los Alamos where they thought they could get some of these radioactive pharmaceuticals to experiment with. And so I ended up getting into that, getting a degree in that. And then starting a company with some friends to expand across the country the dispensaries. They were basically nuclear pharmacies to distribute these radioactive pharmaceuticals to hospitals and clinics around the country. And we took that company public. So I was actually on the other side of being an investor. I was trying to get people to invest in my company. And even then, I didn't really know hardly anything about investing. And So we built that company up and we brought in some partners, and then everybody didn't really get along that well. And then we ended up selling the company, and I cashed out at the ripe old age of 32 and was actually retired at 32. And as I like to say, I really made a mistake in my life at that point, because that's when I should have started studying about investing. And instead, I just took all of the wealth that I had earned and turned it over to a broker over at Morgan Stanley.
And this is where your story gets interesting.
Exactly.
Because, again, you know, when you don't have, or you feel like you're poor or whatever, you think that someone else does, right?
Yeah.
So you are, we were an entrepreneur, and in this world now, and I'm sure you've seen it, everybody's getting into venture. Everybody is trying to invest in venture funds or even trying to be an angel investor. And I mean, we'll talk about that at another time, but just because you're going through that process doesn't mean you really understand money. And so talk to us about what happened and how long did it take for the demise of this broker to wake you up to what was really going on?
So, you know, it's funny, when you're the CEO of a publicly traded company, you know, everything's kind of out there because we do all these filings with the SEC. And brokers kind of go through these filings looking for company officers who might be getting money or have a lot of stock, and they want to help you diversify that portfolio, you know, or your assets from your own company stock. So they would cold call me quite frequently. And this one guy cold called me, and turned out he also handled the account for Steve Jobs. He was up in San Francisco. And I thought, oh, that's interesting, you know, of Apple. And so we started chatting, and I said, well, yeah, come on down. He wanted to come down. I was in the Los Angeles area. He came down. We met. And so I ended up moving some money to him. And then when I sold my company, and listen, I'm not trying to pat myself on the back here, but I actually tell the story in some of these dollar amounts to explain literally my stupidity and my lack of knowledge that led me to this business. But at the ripe old age of 32, I was handed about $6 million. Can you believe this? 1985 was a long time ago and a lot of money. And I just turned it over to this broker. And what he did is he put me mostly just in safe bonds, traded a few stocks, and I learned afterwards this was kind of their mode of operation to kind of make it safe and then slowly build up the trading so they can generate more and more fees from you. Many years later, it was I think about 13, 14 years, my friend was killed in a car wreck, and the widow called me up a few years after that actually, and said that many of the deceased husband's friends said they were going to help her, but they wouldn't show up when she needed it. And they weren't really there for her. And I was down the list. I don't know if I was number four or number five in the list, but I was down there a ways. And I had set up another company in the interim. I just had sold that again the second time. And she called me, and I thought, you know what? I never really took the time myself to understand this, but because she has this need, I'm going to really do this now. And so I go to Barnes & Noble. I come out of there with two bags of books, 22 books, and I just started plowing through those books. And she is the one that really motivated me to do this. Ironically, I wasn't motivated to do it myself, partly because I was focus on trying to find another company. Remember, I was only 32. You know, this is 12 years of doing that, though, so I was 44 by that time. But I still hadn't landed on a company that I felt was really worthy of my time and my skills. And so as I started plowing through all these books, and famously, I read books that are now very famous. And in fact, they're talked about in this new book by Robin Wigglesworth, which I just interviewed him a couple days ago. It's funny, you go from being the interviewee to the interviewer, huh?
Exactly.
Anyway, this book I highly recommend to anybody who has an interest in investing. This gives the history of the creation of the index fund, probably the single most important investment or invention in finance. I want to restate that. The single most important invention in finance. This is such an important idea that investors should diversify, buy some, you know, combination of companies that have similar characteristics, small companies, large companies. It's just a massive idea. Anyway, so I discovered this idea by reading A Random Walk Down Wall Street, Bogle's books, Common Sense on Mutual Funds, Bogle on Investing, I think it was called. He's got a dozen books that he wrote over the years. Really a great author and a great service to investors and literally mankind. He really did a wonderful service. And may he rest in peace, by the way. And so after reading through these books, I was literally shocked to find out that investors weren't beating the market. They were being beat by the market. It was the complete opposite of what most people perceived what that was going on. Most people pick some stocks and they do this and that. I know you're an investing group or a club and you're probably doing some stock picking, but I can assure you there's a better way to invest than just trying to pick individual stocks. And so anyway, I figured all that out and I started checking around on the internet. So this is 1998 that I figured all this out. And the internet was pretty new then, but there was one website out there. It was called indexfunds.com. And there was discussion boards and articles. And man, I said, oh, that's really interesting, but how are they making money? And they were doing the old banner ad deal. You know, that was the original sort of business model for websites. We'll do some interesting content, and then we'll sell banner ads. But it occurred to me that maybe the real business opportunity there was to set up a business where we would invest people's money for a percentage of their assets. And that way we can actually help more people invest properly. So one point that I know you wanted me to probably mention is that when I finally got those books and I really dug into this and I went to the internet and I started looking at Microsoft Money, I think it was called back then, I could draw charts and look at the difference in the growth of dollars over various periods of time. I concluded that my lack of knowledge about the proper way to invest created an opportunity cost for me that was somewhere in the vicinity of $30 million. I couldn't sleep. I was so upset with myself that I hadn't really learned about this earlier. And then the aha moment was, oh my goodness, I wonder how many other people had a similar experience. And as I started asking other friends of mine, nobody really understood these investment principles, really focused around what's called the efficient market hypothesis, which is a 2013 Nobel Prize for a gentleman named Eugene Fama. And in essence, that says that the security price, I say securities because both stocks and bonds, represents all the available information and knowledge that's available to investors, including what that means in the future in terms of their forecasts. And at the same moment, half of the traders think it's something to buy. The other half of the traders think that this is a good time to sell. And through this kind of negotiation that goes on between willing buyers and willing sellers, they go through what's called the price discovery process and arrive at a fair price for the securities. And most stock picking, market timing, style moving around, I'm going to buy small cap, I'm going to buy large cap,
trading
is all based on the idea that some investment is either overvalued or undervalued. as it turns out, and the guy got a Nobel Prize for this, that's not the case. All securities are fairly valued all the time. I'm going to stop there because I know you got some questions.
Yeah,
I can go on. As you see, I can go on and on without any questions.
I know. And that's why I have my questions, because one, I brought you to this community so that people could know about you and the work that you do. So, you know, after listening to this episode, please check out Mark Hebner. He has a website. He has a company. He has a lot of free information. Even I think your first book is available for free online on your website. So, but the question I have, and I want to take you back to the aha moment, the epiphany moment of what happened after you read the books. What happened when you realized that you had $6 million and trusted a broker? The broker did what was in his best interest, not your best interest. Talk to us about that moment, you know, and what you decided to do to communicate to, you know, the broker to do your own thing, because that kind of moment of revelation and action, I think, is important for people to hear so that they know as they are learning how they can do better for themselves, because nobody else is going to do it for you.
That's
and
right.
If you trust in somebody else to do it for you, know that you trusted them to get over on you because you don't have enough to ask the right questions.
That's right. I see someone wrote here for richer or broker. I'd like to say that the reason, and I'm sorry if there's any brokers on here, but the reason they call them broker is when they're done with you, you're broker. Anyway, the aha moment really hit me when I concluded that the investment strategy that I had been using with this broker was not an optimal investment strategy. It didn't maximize my return given the risk, but it also did not properly match the risk exposure to my risk capacity. That's part of that's one of the most important elements of investing, is for each investor to assess how much risk they're capable of holding. It's not just a tolerance question, really. There are many elements. I have five dimensions of what I call risk capacity. We have a little questionnaire, a survey, where you can go through and it'll give you a score between 1 and 100. And that number leads to the percentage of stocks versus bonds you should have in your portfolio. And I was very young, you know, I ran a company. I actually went back and got my MBA, and I was certainly capable of understanding this information, but I actually realized that I didn't take that far enough and I missed out on this huge opportunity. And so what occurred to me is this: there was a business opportunity here. The aha moment was that I didn't beat the market. I didn't, and a market is like appropriate risk level. I didn't beat my appropriate risk level. It was kind of like a personal benchmark. And I should be getting those types of returns. And so after a little while, it took me a while to decide that my next business venture would be to put this information online so that investors could read about it and then give them an opportunity to give their name and phone number to me at, you know, certain points in time as they were going through my website. And then I could call them up and try to get them to become clients. And that's what we did. We built this company over this almost 23 years now. We started in March of 1999. And we ended up last year at about 4. Let me just see. I was just looking at that number. For last year, we ended up at about 4.2 billion. And I think we'll end up this year, we'll see, in the $5 billion range of assets that I'm responsible for and that our company manages. We have 50 employees here. that help investors invest for their future and for their retirement.
So let's take you back to what did you do? So you learned this stuff. You talked about the company. But talk a little bit more about what did you tell your friend's widow and what did you tell your broker? Because I think that those are two important conversations that you had at a certain point in your life after teaching yourself about investing.
Thank you for refining that and getting me to what you're trying to get me to say, is which is I sat down after learning all about this and I wrote a 20-page letter to my broker telling him all of these things that I learned and showing him what, at least in my perception, I could have earned had I invested, you know, more appropriately, which is a portfolio of index funds matched to my risk capacity. And I sent him this 20-page letter and I told him I was moving all of my money to Vanguard and to set up a portfolio there, which I did. I moved everything and bought all these different funds at Vanguard. As I continued my research, I discovered another interesting company called Dimensional Fund Advisors, who I would say had enhanced the idea of indexing by designing some of their own indexes around small companies and value companies, and really getting into some different niches, if you will, of markets. And so back then, anyway, Dimensional didn't really want to work with the public. And instead, they basically taught advisors their way of investing. And if you were open to those ideas, then they were willing to allow you to bring your clients to them. The primary idea is that you're a buy and hold investor for the long term of a globally diversified portfolio. That's in essence what they teach you. And so because they were not really open to the public, I thought, you know what, I need to create a website that tells this story to the world, to the public, so they could learn about it, and then maybe they would come to me. So I go to the widow, and I tell her about my idea of wanting to start this company, and I told her I was going to put my money in, and I was asked her if she would be willing to invest with me to start this company. And I said, but before you do that, I'm going to give you this book by John Bogle, and I want you to carefully read through it, word for word, make notes on every page, because I want to check to see that you actually read it. Because the last thing I want to be accused of was taking advantage of some widow to get her to invest with me, right? Well, she was doing a lot of traveling at that time because she was by herself and she had fairly a substantial amount of assets. And so she would take that book on an airplane. She would read it on the way there, read some more on the way back, go on another trip. She finally called me up one day and she says, Mark, I've read this book very carefully. She had a college degree, and so I accepted the fact that she was capable of understanding all this. And she said, I think this is a marvelous idea to start your company, and I want to be your first client. So I said, great. And ironically, when I went to her house and I explained all the things I wanted to do, her daughter was sitting at we're at the kitchen table, but the daughter's over at the kitchen counter, right? Sitting on a little stool. And I'm talking to the mother the whole time, right? When I'm all done, the daughter says, Mark, I'll do it and I'll be your first client.
So the daughter, how old was the daughter?
She was, I would say she's 25, maybe. That's a good question. I don't know. Somewhere in her early 20s. Mm-hmm. But, you know, her parents had given her a little money, set up an investing account. Her father, who's the deceased gentleman we talked about, was into investing and had set up accounts for these kids and stuff. So, you know, it's kind of like I came to your house and I was trying to tell Ann about this And all of a sudden, Ione shows up in the corner saying, Mark, I'll do it.
Right.
So her name was right. Lauren. And so to this day, 23 years later, when she sends me an email, she just signs it number one. And when I write back to her, I say, dear number one.
I love it. I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful, you know, to have built something that people can really stay with. Because
yes.
as you know, within the financial industry, you know, the turnover is high. You burn so many bridges. People get taken advantage of. People are
yeah.
fly by night, you know. So
yeah.
I think that speaks volumes. Thank you. And thank you for, you know, talking. Because I think that's an important part of your story for people, again, to hear that. You can be successful in business. You can be successful in your career. You can even make a lot of money or even get a windfall of money.
Yep.
But if you do not know how to invest it or have the skills to learn enough to ask the right questions of the person you've entrusted to invest it for you.
Yep.
It can either be a recipe for disaster or it can be, you know, opportunity cost just, you know, can really hinder you to the point where you don't build the wealth you want to or even leave the legacy financially that you want to. So before I go to my next question, Ms. Ann, did you want to, because you seem to be ready to...
To pounce.
To jump in, to
I can see her leaning in.
Yeah. So I want to just check in.
Go ahead, Ann.
Sure.
Well, you know, we have a lot of people listening in, and for those of you that have just joined us or you're listening to the podcast a little later, I just want to let you know that we're talking with Mark Hebner, and Mark is the founder and president of Index Fund Advisors, Inc., IFA, but he is also so many, many, many other things. He's a wealth advisor with a Series 65. He has an MBA from University of California, Irvine, and a bachelor's in nuclear pharmacy from the University of New Mexico. Mark was also a member of the Young Presidents Organization for over 20 years. And is currently a member of the World Presidents Organization and the CEO Organization. Before founding Index Fund Advisors in 1999, Mark was president, CEO, and co-founder of Syncor International, previously a public company, SCOR, from 1975 to 1985. And in January 2003, Cardinal Health acquired Syncor for approximately $850 million. Mark, sitting here listening to your story just brings back memories of why this podcast was formed. And I want to remind everybody who's listening, Ione and I are volunteers. We're not selling any stocks. We're not giving any stock advisement. We're not day traders. We're not any of those things. We are very simply volunteers. But volunteers with a heart and a spirit of service to bring to you the very best, as we all learn that everybody has an investing story. See, oftentimes, Mark and everybody, we see people here where they are up here. What the program is doing is helping all of us understand that everybody started down here someplace. Doesn't matter where that place is. We all started at a similar place and had a desire to learn more. So when I'm sitting here listening to you tell your story about your money and how it was not growing, I'm feeling a little good because I don't feel too bad about my own story.
In good company.
And I know I'm in good company, but we're all in good company, and the key is education. That's what we're talking about. Mark self-educated himself. He didn't sit back and bemoan and groan about what happened to me or woe is me. I could have well, that's what motivated him in the beginning when he realized how far he could have been. But also, but what did it for him, which I love hearing you say, it was the fact that you were so far down that list by the time she got to you, you decided, you know what? I might be in the same place she is right now.
Yeah.
Let me learn how to earn, and then I can teach it. And that's what we're doing here as volunteers. We all have a journey. We have a lot of volunteers listening into you, Mark, and I know they're taking really good notes, so we want to encourage everyone. Please comment, like, and share this show. Let me say it again. Please comment, like, and share the show. But also, please remember, if you are not a member of Better Investing, and this is your first or second time listening, please go to betterinvesting.org, and at the very bottom of the website, register for the free 90-day trial of the organization membership. But anyway, Ione, I'll turn it back over to you, Mark, but I just wanted to just let everybody know, Mark, it is a pleasure listening to you with all of this information and the book Trillions. I actually wrote down four or five books that you mentioned.
Trillions. And I think, you know, my book is also very good. I think we're actually sold out on Amazon, but you can buy a used one on there. You know, it's actually Index Funds is the actual title. And then the subtitle is the 12-step recovery program for active investors.
Excellent.
And I break down my investing lessons into these 12 steps.
Excellent.
Love it.
All right, Ione, back to you. Thank you both.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Ann. So as we're in now the second half of the program, I have about five questions that I would like you to expound upon. So we'll keep it tight. You know, I'll let you have the reins. You have the reins, but let's get to these questions.
I actually have a horse and real reins, by the way. Go ahead.
Well, with as much money as you do, I'm sure you do. But let's pick up from where Ms. Ann just dropped us off at. You have this phrase, replacing speculation with education. You talk about that a lot. Expound on that for people
sure.
that just heard it, you know, replacing it speculation with education. What's that mean to you, Mark?
So I don't know what the percentage
and how people can do it.
Okay. So first of all, this was the motto for our TV studio. I have our own TV studio at our office. Lately, we're just doing it at home now. But, I mean, we have a whole news desk and cameras. If you go to IFA.com and you look at our videos, you'll see our studio in there. And then sometimes we use a green screen where we can put anything we want behind us. But the idea behind replacing speculation with an education is the great majority of investors, it might be as much as 97%, are focused on speculating. They're focused on reading today's news and then trying to decide, what should I do with my money? I mean, I did an interview this morning with CNBC on an article on inflation, and they wanted to say, well, what should investors do now? And I told her, nothing. If they've got a properly designed, what I call all-weather portfolio, they don't need to trade or do anything. What they need to do is sit tight and capture the returns of the markets that are there to be earned. The S&P 500, the small cap Russell 2000, the Russell 1000 value. There's a lot of indexes out there that provide wonderful long-term returns for investors. And all you need to do is put together a portfolio of these and be educated about why that's a better idea. So we do, I don't even know how many videos I've done. We might have done 300 videos in our studio. We took a lot of those up off of our website because they became stale in the SEC's language. And so I don't know, I can see real quick, but we don't have that many up at the moment, but we still have quite a few in our video library here, if I can actually get it to show up. There we go. So I have 216 videos right now in our library, and you can go in there and spend many, many hours going through and learning about investing. But we built this studio and we built the content on IFA.com to provide an education so people can get over this hurdle of wanting to speculate. And it is the natural inclination for investors. One of the authors that writes about passive investing is a gentleman named Jason Zweig. He writes for the Wall Street Journal. And Jason calls it the prediction addiction. People are addicted to making this prediction, this forecast, and then saying, okay, how do I bet on this? How do I play this idea to leverage my perception of what the market's going to do so I can beat the market? I don't even know if they even think of it as beating the market. They're just thinking I'm going to get a great return on this. What they don't realize is the market gives you a great return, and it does so with less risk, and with less risk is really the equivalent of more certainty, or you could say less uncertainty, of capturing those returns because your investment is so much more diversified. So there's a whole bunch of academic concepts that are important to investors. And so those are what we focus on in our studio in terms of an education. We brought in Nobel Prize winners, and we've interviewed so many people over the years, all in the hopes of trying to teach investors more and more about investing so they let go of this speculative desire, really. It's really a desire to do this.
And I think that's why your first book is so important, because it really does equate trading with any other addiction.
Yeah.
And, you know, and treating it like a true recovery process. And I talked to my cousin earlier today, shout out to Sequoia. And, you know, I'm going to say this, I didn't know if I was going to say it or not, but I'm actually pretty concerned. I said this, I think last year, when everybody was getting into the market, they weren't investing, they were trading.
Yeah.
And with COVID and this aspect of trading, I was concerned for people's health. I'm still concerned for people's mental health, because yeah, that level of activity creates a certain level of anxiety on top of the already existing health anxiety. And, you know, unfortunately, the effects of that is going to yet to be seen in a few years. So that's one. The second thing is, I'm concerned within the next 5 or 10 years, what's going to happen to everyday people's own personal wealth, because there is so much increase in access to opportunity. Everybody wants to be in venture capitalism. Everybody is self-certifying as an accredited investor,
yeah,
not realizing the risk that they are taking on.
Yep.
And it's just going to me, and within 5 to 10 years, it's just going to kind of come to bear, because they don't realize that being simply an index fund and not worrying about it is actually increasing their reward ratio and decreasing their risk.
That's right. That's right.
So I have to say that, just because I think, you know, you're one of the best guests for me to kind of get that off my chest. And I'm going to ask my second question, which is, explain this concept you have about thinking they can cheat risk.
Yeah. So the idea of cheating risk is tied to this concept that you can get a very quick, high return in a short period of time. A quick return, same thing. People can make a fast dollar overnight, okay? Well, that's not how economics works. Basically, markets are very volatile. In fact, half the days, approximately 49% of the days, have negative returns, and 51% have positive returns. And that's pretty much the same across all equities and all fixed income. And so when people think they have some idea that they're going to tenfold their money, they're going to get a ten bagger, as they call it, they're really thinking this is a shortcut. And a shortcut to riches is like you've cheated risk. Risk is the reason we get a return, and you need to experience risk to get the return. So if you think you're going to leap over the risk and just get the return, have your cake and eat it too, you are basically fooling yourself. By the way, when you said people are trading and not investing, I prefer to say they're gambling. They're literally gambling instead of investing. The casino is a little more of an investor than the gambler is. In fact, because they know all the statistics of all the games in the house, they're really more akin to a academic investor, and the gambler in the casino is more akin to people trading stocks and day trading and doing all of that.
I love that analogy. I'm going to insert one thing because I forgot to say this in my, what do you call that thing? Soapbox, when I was on my little soapbox.
You were on the soapbox, yeah.
When I was on the, so I'm getting back on it right quick.
Hop up there.
So the last part of my comment is the thing people don't recognize is, at least to me, this is all my opinion, that there's a certain trait, characteristic that you need to have to really build wealth, and that trait is patience. So you can have access to all this opportunity. You can have doors open you've never had open before. But if you, your own self, don't have the patience to withstand the risk, to bear out and wait for the reward on the other side, you may end up poorer than you were before. So that was my, what you want to say about that, Mark?
So can I support that with a little graphic?
Yes, please.
If you're okay with that?
Yep.
So, you know, they give me a hard time at the office. They like to tell me I never met a chart that I didn't like. But, you know, on our website here, we have a chart library with 97 charts that I think are really important for investors. And I would urge all of you to spend a little time going through our charts page here. But I'm going to go down to one of my favorite charts that addresses this idea of earning your return over time. And so let's start off, let's just look at an S&P 500 index fund. And what we've done on this chart is we've broken out your holding period into days, months, quarters, 1 year, 5 year, 10 year, and 15 year. And what this tells you is the percentage of time, let's say in days, that we had negative returns, in this case over the last 50 years, the 50-year button is pushed here. And when it's light gray, it's the positive return. And so here we can see on a daily basis, it's 51% positive and 49% negative. But if I hold on a little bit to 30 days, I get to 1 month, now I'm 63% past positive returns and only 36% negative. Let's jump to 1 year. Turns out in any 12-month period, that's what we looked at here, this is 599 12-month period, so it could be intra-year. It doesn't have to be January to December. 80% of those years have had a positive return. Those are wonderful odds for any investor. Now, on the other hand, roughly 1 in 5 12-month periods, you should expect a negative return about 20% of the time. When I get into 5-year periods, and this is with a full equity portfolio that most investors should not have, it's 90% of 5-year and 95% of 10-year and 100% of 15-year periods. Now, more classic portfolios like a 60-40 portfolio where you put some bonds for 40%, 60% stocks. And now in 5-year holding periods, it's 99.46% of the time over 551 periods that you had a positive return. So this is the patience that you're referring to, because in short periods, you could still end up with negative returns, but you need to be patient and let time do its work with your investments. And the longer you hold on to it, the more likely you will capture what we call the fair return for the risk of the investment. Along the top, these are various levels of risk. And you can see even at a 60-40 portfolio here that, the return has been in 5-year periods, roughly 10% a year over the last 50 years and 10 months. This data is using what we call index portfolio data. So we are using indexes prior to the existence of a index tracking fund, a passively managed fund that tracks close to an index.
I'm so glad you shared this, Mark, because number one, this is the first time that I've ever seen a visual that represent that phrase, that statement we all know.
Right.
Time in the market, timing the market.
Man,
so,
you're good.
Hey, you know.
You did a good job there, Ann, raising this girl. Go ahead, Ione.
Miss Ann and Better Investing. And Dan too. So, Mark, thank you so much for showing that. And my next question is, can you break down rational risk and irrational risk?
Sure. So I think of the different types of risks you take. And I'm going to go back to another chart because I found, and I've been doing this for 23 years, educating investors. And I've just found that these visuals really help explain my points. So let's go back in time a little bit to 1952, where a gentleman named Harry Markowitz sat in the library of the University of Chicago. And like a lightning bolt, it occurred to him that investors were only looking at the returns, the past returns of their investments, and not thinking about the risk. And you can actually think of this risk as the uncertainty of your expected return, okay? And so, and he thought and came up with the idea to plot these on one chart. So for example, right here in the center, you see this SP, that's the S&P 500. And over this 43-year period, it has had a return of about 12%, you see over on the left side here. And if you come down, it's been at a risk of about 15. Well, that's a pretty good risk return ratio, or your reward for your risk is what that is, right? And you might consider that a good risk. But look down here in the corner. Here's silver, for example. Silver has had this wild risk. That means it's had lots of volatility over the years, up and down, of about 33 on our scale, and it's only provided a return, if you just bought and held it over this whole period, of about 3%. So that would be considered a not good use of your risk budget. We all kind of have a budget of risk we can spend on our investments. And if you're going to put some of that in silver or in some gold, you can see that that would pull down your return. Likewise, if you were thinking about investing in individual stocks, you can see that those were also not good risks. So what am I showing here? This is 45 years, and I'm showing the companies who actually stayed in business for 45 years. So on the New York Stock Exchange, amazingly, only 194 companies stayed in business from 1976 until the end of last year. And what you see, let's compare those. Here's the S&P again, and here's our portfolio as we design it. But let's just work with the S&P. It's nice and simple. You see that all of these companies had more risk individually than in the S&P. Well, that makes sense because in the S&P, we're getting 500 companies. And so all the ups and downs of individual companies are smoothed out by an index like the S&P. So a risk of 15, no stock has a risk of 15. Here's one that's a Southern company. It's 16.6, but even it had a return here of 10.8, while the S&P had a return of closer to 12. If I can get my mouse to get on there. Come on, it's not quite showing up. There it is. So it's been 11.8 and a risk of 15. So that's still a better investment. Basically, you want your investments to be up here, the highest return at the least amount of risk, right? And so you can see all these individual stocks did worse. And in fact, we can even put Apple on here. I had this designed to include Apple because that's something more people relate to today. And look at this Apple stock. It's had a huge risk of 45. You know, it almost went out of business. I don't know if you know the story. Bill Gates wrote a check to Steve Jobs to keep Apple in business. And if he hadn't done that, I think Apple actually would have gone away. Maybe somebody else would have stepped up. I don't know. But anyway, the return has been high, 18, but investors had to have the stomach to go through all of these gyrations of the Apple's price up and down over these very many years. This is 40 years now here of these returns. And so what you also see here is there are very few companies that get above this diagonal line. This is called the capital markets line. And if I get out of the period that doesn't include Apple, there's basically one company that gets over and above this risk return line, which was Walmart over this period.
Exactly.
And of course, in 1976, who would have thought that Sam Walton and his little pickup truck in Arkansas would have ended up with the best returning stock. But even then, it's at this very high risk of 25. Let me just tell you about risk a second. If you're in a portfolio 100, as we design it, in a bad market, you should expect to lose one half of your money. We can't get anybody to raise their hands here, but who's signing up to lose half of your money? Hardly anybody. And so what that says is nobody should have more risk than portfolio 100. Should be to the right of it on this chart. And what you see is all of these individual companies are more risk than that 100. So that is a what was the term you used? It's not a good use of your risk.
Yeah, rational risk and irrational.
It's an irrational risk exposure to try to invest in these individual companies. Now, you could do it better by owning, you know, maybe 50 of them. All of those will get you a little closer to the, you know, less and less risk. But why do that when today, for free, you can go out and buy the S&P 500? Or for 2 basis points or 3 basis points, and buy all 500 of these, position your portfolio to get maybe 10% over longer periods of time. Here I can show you the S&P over very long periods of time. Here over 93 years now, I can click on this chart. And here you can see for the last 93 years and 10 months, we just updated this for October 31st, the return has been 9.83% per year for the S&P 500. I don't even think any of those stocks, maybe General Motors, even General Motors went bankrupt. Maybe General Electric was even around in 1928. So you couldn't have earned those returns from really any individual stock. And if you did, they all had greater risks than that S&P 500. Okay, so that was a long-winded answer, but a pretty precise answer.
Yeah. So this is my last question, and it's a little, it's almost like a 2-for-1. It's going to be 2-in-1.
All right.
And we're jumping, and I'm going to make the disclaimer for you. You can make it yourself if you want to. You know, Mark is an investment advisor. He is not advising anybody on anything. He is also not a tax advisor, because what I'm going to ask you is a tax question. And I'm asking this question more so because there are a lot of people that are starting to invest, learning how to invest, and actually opening up brokerage accounts and all of this. And my thing is they're not thinking about strategy. right? So I think right
tax,
now.
Tax strategy?
Well, we'll get to tax strategy, but they're not even thinking about their overall financial picture, right? So to me, you have people who are saying, oh, I want to invest. Let me open up a brokerage account. Let me start investing there. And they have not yet, let's say, maximized their 401k or even
IRA.
Open up a Roth IRA. And to know that you can put money in there and still be investing, but it's in an account that is really probably going to more fit and suit your needs for the future, right? So that's kind of where I'm coming from with the question. And this is a question that I wrote down from one of your previous interviews, but
okay.
I wanted you, so this is how I wrote it. Can you speak to how important considering taxes is to the beginner investor and the experienced investor? What should they look for and what should we consider?
Okay. So first of all, we do taxes. This is my IFA taxes entity, which is a division of IFA. It's part of our fiduciary services that we offer clients. We do tax returns, accounting. I have two CPAs on staff and three additional staff members that work with them. And we do lots of tax planning, tax advice. We're currently doing that for over 300 clients. So that is part of what we do. But to me, one of the things that people often don't think about is the capital gains tax, the short-term capital gains tax that are generated as they trade stocks. And if you think you've made a bunch of money on some stock, let's say you bought Tesla or something and you got the rise, and now you think it's a bad time to be in Tesla. I think it took a drop today or yesterday. It had a pretty big hit. And now you're going to get out. You're not going to keep all that gain. When you fire your taxes, you're going to see if that's a short-term gain, it's going to be just like your paycheck almost. It's an ordinary income tax, which can be very high. Even if it's a long-term gain, it can be very high. What this leads you to is thinking very carefully about what you can buy now and hold until you need the money. Not because you've had some change of mind about owning a particular stock or a particular mutual fund a manager or whatever it might be. Because every time you change or you trade, it's an expensive endeavor for you, both from a tax perspective, and it could be that you're making a mistake. This is the other thing that happens. People have high costs and high mistakes. And between the two of those, they have a big negative impact on their overall wealth. Now, you talked about financial planning in general. We use the tool called eMoney, which allows investors to put in all of their assets, track the value of all of their assets, actually create a balance sheet and an income statement. They can track their expenditures and their income coming in, all kinds of things. And they all go into that program. And it's really very helpful for clients. So I don't know. Does that help?
Mark, I didn't want to interrupt you. I just want to say, that response was so succinct and on point. And I'm glad you said it the way you said it, because I think that as people learn about investing and start investing, they need to start asking questions. Now, I guess this is the last thing, because I know you pulled up, that IFA does taxes. What are some of the questions that investors, whether it be especially beginner investors or intermediate investors, should be asking of their financial planner or from their tax accountant? Because again, just like you did when you came into $6 million, you just handed it over and expected that he did it. What are some of the questions that investors can ask, people that they're entrusting their money to, so that they can number one, test to see if the person is actually knowledgeable, and two, just get a better understanding of what that person is either doing or not doing for them.
Yeah. So the first place I like to start is to have investors ask their advisor, are you my fiduciary? A fiduciary is a legal term for someone who must act in your best interest, not in the interest of the advisor. And you will see this contrast between brokers and independent registered investment advisors. A broker actually has an exclusion from being a fiduciary for their clients as part of the client agreement when you sign up with JP Morgan, Morgan Stanley, Merrill Lynch's of the world. They do this because they have a different standard. It's just called suitability. And their advice is to sell you things that actually, in many cases, pay them. Their investments pay them a commission, a load. And so it can put them in a conflict of interest situation. A registered investment advisor, unless they have disclosed it, should only be paid by the client, meaning they now kind of go on the same side of the table as the investor, look at the world of investments out there, the universe of investments, and pick what's best for the client. So they must act in the best interest of the client, even if it goes against their interest. So that's number one. Number two, and it's related to this, you should ask an advisor, how do you get paid? I want you to show me, I want to follow the money, tell them, okay? I want to know, how are you compensated? Are there contests at your firm so that if you trade my account more, you're going to get a bonus? Tell me how your compensation works. And you might be shocked or surprised, assuming they even give you full disclosure as to how they are paid. The same thing with insurance agents. Now, tax advisors usually have an hourly rate or some fixed rate they charge you to do their work. And they have a fiduciary duty, as does a lawyer to their clients. So those are a couple things for asking advisors. The third thing I would do is, what kind of investor education do you provide? I want to know about the investments you're recommending to me. I want to be able to track these investments and compare them to some appropriate benchmark. Oh my God, that's so important. I like to say the missing link in investment analysis is proper benchmarking. What should you be comparing your returns to? And it's not just the S&P 500. You need an appropriate benchmark that's appropriate for the investments you're holding. So you want investing tools. And you don't want to just go to IFA.com to get your knowledge and then, you know, go to somebody else. But I would say you need to take responsibility yourself. Nobody is going to care about your money like you do. And I have found sort of the dividing line between those who are pretty good about understanding investment and those who aren't is just the mere fact they've sat down and read a book. I know it's not easy, but you've got to do it. Jack Bogle's got a great book, The Little Book of Common Sense Investing. It's a lot like this book, same size, same topics, but you need to get yourself educated. And if you don't do this, you're going to be paying tuition to what we call the University of Capital Markets. The somebody is going to take your hard-earned money because you didn't take the time to educate yourself. And I would just give a lot of credit to Anne and Ione for volunteering their time to try to educate you about this, because you need to save for your retirement. You cannot expect the government to provide you enough income in your retirement so you can have a reasonably comfortable life, you need to do this yourself. And one general rule of thumb is every dollar you make, you should take 10% of it, set it aside in some form of investment account. Start your IRA, contribute your 401k. When those are all filled up and you still have savings that go beyond what you can put in those, put it into a brokerage account. Don't get crazy buying a bunch of individual stocks. Just buy the S&P 500. I would be very happy if that's all you bought. But after you've gotten into that a little bit, then buy a little bit of Russell 2000. Buy a little bit of small value, large value. I can show you what a proper portfolio looks like on our website if you want to see it. I know we're kind of running on short on time here, but I'm okay.
You have it up. We did put the link in the chat so that people could see it. But since you have it up, go ahead and show us.
So I just want to also show you, if you go to the video link on our website, Index Funds, the movie, here's my actual documentary film. It's an hour long. It's broken out into my entire 12 steps. So you don't have to read my book. You can get a pretty good sense of this. But like money people, when they see the movie, then they sometimes want to go to read the book also. And so in this, I lay out, I would say, the important principles for investors. But also, we have 20 portfolios that we provide here online. We don't show you the allocations because we had so many people copy us over time. But I just clicked the secret button that gets you to them. You didn't see what it was. But let's say you were putting money. Let me go to an IRA account because that's probably what most people have. If you were putting money in an IRA account, some of you can do some screenshots of this if you want. This is how we would allocate a portfolio that's 70% stocks and 30% fixed income. And these are the types of things that you should be invested in when you're designing a globally diversified portfolio tilted towards small companies and value companies. And we recommend doing that all over the world, international small cap value, international small, international value, get some global real estate in there, small value in the U.S., get some microcaps in the U.S., some large cap value, some S&P 500. I skipped emerging markets down here. You can also buy value and small cap there. And you can do this at Vanguard very cheaply. This is a cost 6 basis points to buy this Vanguard portfolio, S&P 500, Vanguard value, Vanguard small cap value, emerging markets, buy a little Vanguard total bond index fund. So these are very sophisticated portfolios. I have clients with hundreds of millions of dollars who invest in these same portfolios, and I strongly urge you to forget about just about any other form of investing. Ann's going to kill me, maybe. This is really the ultimate portfolio for investors to look at these types of allocations. So I'm going to stop there.
I just want to say thank you so much, Mark, for all of the information you've shared, especially that last bit, because right now I think that with the self-education that self-education journey a lot of people are taking right now, it really helps to hear from somebody like you, where you sit, your experience, your ups, your downs, your wisdom, and helping them to see the importance of being a long-term investor, giving them some concrete questions to ask financial advisors or financial planners they're looking to hire, because, you know, one of the biggest gaps, people talk about a wealth gap, people talk about an education gap, but I think it's an exposure gap. You know, if we don't make over $100,000, if none of our peers or people at our church invest, where are we going to get the best information or learn how to make the best decisions with our money, which for our environment is contrary So I'm so happy you decided to be a guest on the show. I'm so happy you decided to share your time.
Don't cut me off yet. I'm not done. I want to add one more thing. I know that sounded like a wrap-up because I've done
No, please do.
I want to add one more thing. When you ask that investment advisor, you ask them about their investment strategy and how has it worked. Do we have any data about how you have done? Are you going to pick stocks? Are you going to pick managers? Are we going to buy index funds? What are we going to buy? And I just want to share this one additional chart, and I promise I will shut up after this. But this is, I usually start with this when I have people call me and they want to learn about investing. So there is an army of fund managers out there who spend their days trying to pick stocks for clients. And one of the things you'd like to know as an investor, is there any persistence or any consistency in their ability to beat the market over time? This is shocking information put out by SPIVA. That's the Standard & Poor's Index versus Active study that they update, and they do all kinds of different studies. And I just want to share this one really interesting study just around large cap stocks here in the U.S. They looked at two subsequent, 2 3-year periods, one after the other. And so you can see here from 2013 to 2016, they looked at 938 mutual fund managers who were mostly stock pickers. And they wanted to know how many beat their benchmark. In this case, it's probably the S&P 500. What you see is only 10% did better than the S&P 500. Right off the bat, there's a 90% chance you will do better just buying the S&P 500. But a lot of people say, well, who are those guys? Are those gals that are picking those stocks? They must be geniuses. I want to sign up, pay them 1% a year to pick stocks for me. Well, check this out. In the next 3-year period, they followed those 99 managers who beat the market in the first 3 years, and zero of them continued to outperform the market, in the second 3-year period. What this is telling you is that this is just a chance game that's being played. There is no stock picking skill. There is no evidence that managers being paid $5 million a year to pick stocks for somebody actually have the ability to pick stocks, because those who did well, and this is proof that they were just lucky, their luck did not persist. This is persistence about performance. That luck did not persist in the subsequent 3-year period. So if you have not got the message from this chart, please call me and I will be happy to explain this again. But this says you shouldn't be trying to pick stocks. Nobody should be trying to pick stocks. Instead, you should be focused on asset classes. Do I want to own some large cap? Do I want to own some small cap, some small value? And focus on the index, not the stock picker who's trying to buy individual stocks to beat the index. I'm done.
Thank you, Mark. You know, and I think what you're saying is absolutely correct, especially for the beginner investor. You have to have
those are the professionals. It's not just the beginner.
Oh yeah, no, but I'm saying the beginner investor is usually trusting someone else to do what's best for them.
Yeah.
We have our own comments in the chat because within the better investing community, we successfully pick stocks using the SSG, and we have our own index, which is the BIXX. I think it's BIX or BIXR.
I see BIXX here. It's right, Howard. He doesn't know about the BI.
Yeah.
Well, be careful.
I think it's great that you're bringing this perspective, because if you're looking to start somewhere, I always advise people to start with an index fund. Because you have to have time in the market. You shouldn't try to time the market.
That's right. Or time a stock. The reason you can't time the market or a stock, either one.
Right. So with that, I thank you for all of the questions that you have shared, Mark, because, you know, just this last part of the interview, you really equipped some people to ask
some questions.
Ask the right question.
I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Oh, well, we're wrapped for time. And so far, we don't have any. We have some really good remarks thanking you for your time and all that you shared. But, yeah, we don't have any questions so far in the chat. So
I could go on for 3 hours.
Oh, I know.
So she can, too.
But we're not. No. But we're not because this is the thing. You already have so many videos out. You already have, you know, you were just on CNBC this morning. You already have.
Yes.
Will he come to speak at our club?
Here's what I would do. Hang on a second. Let me tell you.
But we could play recording.
If someone wants to do a Zoom call for a club, I'd be happy to do that. I'm not going to travel all over the country. In fact, I'm trying not to travel much. This COVID has worked out great for me because now everybody else is learning Zoom. I've been trying to get people to...
We're in virtual land, so
I know. I've been trying to get people to do this for 23 years. It was in my original business plan to do video conferencing all over the country. So if someone wants me to talk to their club, you can set it up or they can email me, mark@ifa.com. I'd be happy to do that. I got to tell you, listen, I've reached my success. I'm not saying it's over, but I'm at a point now where I'm not really in the sales mode. Maybe it feels that way to you guys. My objective is to help more people. Listen, I don't even know why I bring this up. It's probably a bad analogy, but if you saw Schindler's List, Schindler was literally crying at the end because he wanted to save more Jews from the Nazis. And that's not where we are. But there are so many investors who have been misled about the proper way to invest. And it is literally my mission to help as many people as I can before I go. And so anybody who wants me to come speak to them is helping me in my mission to replace speculation with an education and literally change the way the world invests to a more passive form of investing. You don't have to be stock picking to be an investor. Investing is really about getting a return. It's not just beating, you know, reading up on stocks and reading, you know, 10Ks. You know, Warren Buffett even told people to buy index funds. I don't know if you see that. And he bet a hedge fund that the S&P would beat this manager of hedge funds over a 10-year period. And he just killed that hedge fund guy. The total return of the S&P over that period was 126%. That's all spelled out at the beginning of trillions. And the hedge fund guy had a 36% total return. He killed him. So even Warren Buffett, the king of stock pickers, is telling people just go buy an index fund. So I'm more than happy to do this. If people have questions here, I'd be more than happy to answer them. I don't know if I see any really questions. I just see some comment that I don't know what you're doing. Believe me, I have studied every mutual fund manager. We have studies of 2,300 and something mutual funds over a 20-year period, and there is no evidence that people have stock picking skill. What happens is they get lucky once in a while. And they can get an outsized return out of a stock or out of a time, and then they think that they've done better. But the real problem is can you continue to do that? And if it was a lucky outcome, a lucky event, just like I showed you in that pie chart, that's not something that you should expect to continue into the future.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that the lesson here is you have to invest in order to grow your money. So, you know, no matter all, despite all that you read, all that you listen to, if you're listening right now and you have not yet started investing, you can't even really be a part of this conversation, because if you're not putting as much money to work for you as possible, it really doesn't matter. You're not making nothing, you know? So
how
you're taking all the risk and no reward.
How many of you are familiar with Acorns? Anybody out there?
Oh, yeah, the app. Mm-hmm.
Acorns. So Acorns was started by my client because his son didn't have, our minimum investment is $100,000 at our firm, and the son didn't have enough to invest. So the son went back to college, and he came up with this idea to do a roundup, basically, for each purchase. So if you buy something for $5.25, they take 75 cents out of your checking account and put it into your investment account. And then those funds are invested according to portfolios that I originally set up for them. And they're now doing some of these on their own, but these are all passively managed index portfolios. And so for a new investor who's having a hard time saving, this is a really important tool and a great way to get started as investors. I often recommend this. You can download the app. It's available in all the platforms. And this company was actually had an investment of $100 million by CNBC even. And if you're watching CNBC, you'll see every once in a while when they do some educational stuff that is presented by CNBC and Acorns. And especially if somebody's relatively new and they're having a hard time saving, they have two or three different tools to help you save. And that's the first thing you have to do as an investor is get some savings. That's really one of the harder things for people to do. And you can set up an IRA there and a regular brokerage account. So, all right, I'm going to shut up.
You've been great, Mark. So, and just so people know, you can email Mark. His information is not hard to find. You know, check him out on his website, IFA.
It's just mark@ifa.com, really simple.
Yep.
mark@ifa.com.
And his website is ifa.com.
Yep.
So please follow up with Mark if you're interested in reaching out to him, or definitely check out his site. Thank you, Mark. Thank you for your time, your wisdom, your experience. It was really a joy listening to you and hearing your perspective, because like we talked about in the beginning of the show, you're the first money manager
that
we've ever had on the show. And I think that your own personal individual investing story was important for people to hear. Because it usually is all the same. And so we're just trying to dispel the myth that the other has it better.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
So thank you.
I want to say thank you on behalf of all investors and certainly all the people that showed up today for what you guys are doing. It really is a great service.
Thank you, Mark.
All right. Well, everybody have a great evening. And if I can be of help to anybody, please let me know.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Good night, everybody. See everybody next week. And remember to go to betterinvesting.org and register as a new member and join us in any of the classes that we're hosting. Thank you.
All right.
Goodbye.